A mystery is something which is difficult to explain, something which defies definition. The complexities of human nature are such that we cannot predict human behavior. It remains a mystery, an enigma, something which is not solvable, something which is baffling, perplexing, confusing, but nevertheless a fact of experience that demands answer by the rational and the thinking human mind. We have taken up the meaning of mystery and an enigma. Once upon a time, Sir Winston Churchill commented upon the Soviet Union that the Soviet Union is a riddle within the mystery, inside an enigma. These are synonyms. If you take up Thesaurus by Rogers, they will tell you through examples what is the meaning. The English language is so subtle and so refined. Unfortunately, now it is mutilated, particularly in the newspapers. It is a puzzle, something which is puzzling to the mind, something which is hidden, the hidden truth within the outer surface of the word. So you have to read within the word what is the meaning inside it. Then it's something which we cannot decipher, something which is paradoxical. And as the student advances on in his life, through actual living the life according to the tenets of the doctrine, he finds the mystery within himself. There is no study which is so fascinating as the study of man himself. Who am I? The Delphic Oracle, ancient Greece, said, "Man, know thyself." One of the great poets, Alexander Pope, said, "Presume not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man." Theosophy gives you what is man. And what is the mystery of human nature, which is, as our reading said, an animal as well as a God in the making, the divine starry part above. He is an admixture of the divine and the demoniacal nature of the Bhagavad Gita. Enumerations have been made. He is potentially a god, actually a devil, and an admixture of the divine and the demon. What is this? How to understand man? He can be lower than the beast. He can be higher than a human being towards the status, stature, dignity of self-conscious godhood, which is the goal of life, the goal of human experience. While we study the physical body, the anatomist will tell you it's made up of cells of the body, the atoms of the body. They come together and they disintegrate at the hour of death. The biologists have dissected the body and studied its physiological mechanism. So man is a mechanism. Man is a machine. He's made up of anatomy and physiology. He has got physical nature. The chemistry in the body is there, in the various fluids. He is an electrical, because the electrical vibrations are there in the human heart and the brain, the most complex supercomputer, the human brain, electronic. He is atomic. He has got subatomic particles, which are now dissected by subnuclear subatomic physics. There are over 200 elementary particles of physics, we are told. Neutrino is one of them. They are there in our human body, inside the cell, numerous what are called elementals or lives, which according to theosophy, they are units of energy on the upward way towards the divine. The lowest elements of human nature, below the element, below the mineral. all life is an evolutionary process from the lowest to the highest, from the elemental kingdom below the mineral, then the mineral, vegetable, animal, and the human. Human being is at the apex, at the crown of evolution, we are told. Beings below man look up to him like unto a god. Man has the potentiality of being divine in him to reach to the state of godhood, conscious, self-conscious godhood. Therefore, the mystery of man lies in understanding what is this within the shell, the body. The mind is being dissected by the psychologist, and he says is a collection of sensations and impressions and various reflexes which combine to give birth to the mind. Psychologist says that. Psychoanalyst goes further to dissect the mind, and he tells it a bundle of psychological complexes. Id complex and Oedipus complex and all other things. You get the point? It's mind-boggling. The study of human psychology and psychiatry in modern times is really mind-boggling. And they have now come to a conclusion that man can only be known by his behavior. And they have dissected all human behavior at the level of emotions, at the level of intellectual functioning, at the level of dreams. There are books and books on dreams and how to interpret dreams. But the man remains a hidden mystery. I cannot solve for you, and you cannot solve for me. Each one is a mystery unto himself. He has to solve for himself what he is within the forum of his own consciousness through a life of purity, altruism, and meditation. It is through meditation, through inward turning of the gaze towards that which is indescribable, unnameable, but which can be pursued by our spiritual senses lying dormant within the heart. To awaken those spiritual senses, we require to walk the life according to certain philosophical, ethical principles which are a common denominator of all religions and philosophies. By living the life, says the secret doctrine, thou shalt know the teaching. Doctrine is there, wonderful, couched in the English language, which is accessible to an average intellectual. Implementation becomes a problem. Because while implementing, we are going against the natural current of life. We are going against the conventional grooves of thinking. We are not with the common herd. We are thrown to the periphery of the stream of life that rolls on till we are absorbed in our own consciousness which is within. Then comes the spiritualist who tells us that man is a ghost. I mean, after death he becomes a ghost, the astral shell which is there. The light on the path speaks that we cannot know life till we learn to decipher life. And the whole text is written in an astral cipher to awaken our inner eye and the inner ears. For the light on the path tells us, eyes are the windows of the soul, ears are the gateways of the soul. That spiritual perception is the faculty of the human mind, which is a mystery. Because mind has two functions, higher and the lower, solar and the lunar. And all the complexities of the human mind, or the complexity of human life, conduct and behavior, is the result of the complexities of the human mind when we try to dissect it at the level when it tends towards the lower or towards the higher, where he imbues his life, his atoms of his body, the cells of his body, with a psychic impulse of the lower nature, the karmic nature, the fourth principle in man, or the higher nature, the sixth principle, buddhi. So the link between the animal and the divine, the link between the lower man and the higher, according to theosophy, is septenary, sevenfold. Among the Egyptians it is same, terminology differs. In the Advaita Vedanta philosophy of Shankara Acharya, he is fivefold. According to Saint Paul, in his epistles, he is threefold, body, soul and spirit. In Aziz and Vail, man is defined of triune nature, threefold nature. Physical body, we all know, astral body, the sidereal body of Paracelsus, and overbrooding all this is the divine, the spiritual. In theosophical philosophy, he is septenate. The lower quaternary, physical body, astral body, within the physical, the most important aspect at the physical level, but still it is physical, it is lower. Then there is the life energy, prana, an aspect or a crystallized portion of jiva, the ocean of life around us. And then there is a passional nature, the desire nature. And the higher trinity, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, the spiritual, the spirit, an emanation from the absolute, unknown, unnameable, undefinable, a breath, which makes itself manifest through Buddhi, the divine soul, the spiritual soul. Both Atma and Buddhi are universal, impersonal. Man can know that he is man, can see, can express that I am I. That consciousness is the manasic principle in man, self-conscious principle which connects the duet of Atma Buddhi with the lower quaternary and makes of him a composite structural entity. So now, what belongs to me? Nothing. At the lower level, biological and physical and chemical level, he is made of the formative forces of nature around us, the various elements, fire, air, water, earth, akasha. In the esoteric philosophy, there are seven elements. The last two elements are unknown. Each of these elements have got their elementals, those lives, which are on their upward way themselves, which are there in our body, in our thought structure, in our feeling nature. We are impressing those lives with our thinking, our feeling, our desires. These form those elementals, they don't disappear. No cause generated by human thought, feeling, desire complex can disappear from the world. They cannot vanish into thin air. They become and coalesce with these elementals and become entities which affect others for good or for ill. More or less, in a more or less measure, according to the quality of consciousness imparted to them by the human being on the plane of higher thought or the lower thoughts, refined emotions or the base emotions of human nature, beastly, beneficent to others or maleficent to others. All energies can be directed by the human thought, the dynamic power of human thinking, feeling, desire, and above all this, the will which is a neutral force. That force, which the direction to which is given by our thinking, our feeling, our desire nature. And direction may be towards Sat, the true, or towards Asat, the false. And then we reap the whirlwind. We have sown the wind, we reap the whirlwind, says the secret doctrine. Therefore, what man is in his inner nature is more important than what he appears on the surface. So he said, man is an ice, like an iceberg, you know. A top of it is visible. 1/7 of man is invisible. Out of this, 6/7 of man is invisible. Out of this invisible, the three elements are physical. The other three elements are abstract, not concrete. Manas is an abstraction. At the same time, mind, the human mind, a mystery unto itself, there are two great articles in the Key to Theosophy. Read it over and over again. The dual manas and the mystery of the ego. Profound philosophy, profound psychology. And in one article, the psychic and noetic action in Raja Yoga or occultism. Get these three and try to reflect upon them. That is man. Then you know your place in the scheme of nature. A tiny, insignificant speck in the vast, stupendous whole. Yet, we pride on our learning. We pride on our academies and universities, at our degrees, a chain of degrees, you know. Really, we do not even know matter, says the secret doctrine. What is matter? And in the first volume and in the second volume, in the second part, in the third part, you are given science and the secret doctrine contrasted and gives you the comprehensive view of life, comprehensive view of what is matter itself in its subtle nature. Electromagnetic. Man has that creative force within him because he is a correlation of physical and chemical forces. He is also a correlation of spiritual and psychic forces in nature. And these forces are mentioned in the secret doctrine, Parashakti, Ichashakti, Kriyashakti and so on, synthesized by Devi Prakriti or the light of the Logos. There are various powers which are there in the universe around us. There are various powers in the universe around us. And man is an emanation of those forces in his entire being. And he can rise to a status greater than all those forces in nature. We are told the universe is governed from within without by an endless series of divine intelligences in the cosmos. And man is made up of them. Man is fashioned, fabricated by those divine energies, collectively called the Dhyan Chohans, the phohatic force of the first fundamental proposition. In the preface to Isis Unveiled, Madame Blavatsky has stated, the whole of the universe, including man, is a compound of several elements, yet the expression of a single spirit, the chaos to the sense, the cosmos to the reason. A chaos to the sense, a cosmos to the reason. What does it mean? She went searching in search of God. Where he is? What he is? Who has found him? What happens on the other side of death? Who has gone there to see what happens? She went all over the world, penetrated into the arcane of being, into the various temples, and she came face to face with certain human beings who were more than human beings, called the sages of the Orient. To these great beings, perfected human souls, called the masters of wisdom and of compassion, she lent her ready ear, listening to the story of human evolution, to the story of life. She came to know the mysteries of life and being by dwelling into the arcana of the ancient sanctuaries in ancient Greece and everywhere, India, Egypt. Man has never been left without a friend, Mr. Judge tells us. You are not left alone in your evolutionary cycle. You are being held unseen, unknown, on the inner planes of the higher mind and soul, manas and buddhi. While we are operating in this life, our incarnated manas is involved in the lower nature and is confused by this involution. When we are able to drag ourselves as if by the bootstraps, detach ourselves from our karmic nature, our personal selfish nature, and aligning yourself with our higher spiritual divine ego, buddhi, higher manas, spiritual reincarnating ego, then it becomes the agent of free will and the vehicle of the greatest mental powers known to man. Man has got the power to lift the pyramid of Egypt. Not a rhetoric. The elementals which are there in the universe around us and within us, says Mr. Judge, can only be contacted by man through the power of sound and color. The power of sounds, Madame Blavatsky writes in the Secret Doctrine, can raise the pyramid of Cheops. The power of sound can destroy whole army of soldiers, can reduce whole cities to ashes. That power that can make of a man a god is there, lying dormant, sleeping. It has to be awakened. First activated, awakened, then activated, and then only when geared to the higher purpose of existence through union of man's spirit with the God spirit, the divine in man with the divine in the cosmos, and then the whole life stands before us, inviting us to probe his mysteries, which are no mysteries to an occultist. There is a school of initiation in ancient times. It exists also in modern times, where a student, on his way to becoming a disciple, on his way to becoming accepted disciples, are being initiated into the mysteries of life. Such mysteries were common property of ancient times, lost today, but still existing, unknown to us, but known to those who know. And through these mysteries of initiation, man can become like unto them. And therefore, we are told in the Secret Doctrine that man can become greater than any of these Dhyan Chohans, collectively called the Elohim in the Jewish philosophy, or maybe greater than all of them put together. That man's potentiality is God, is there in human beings. The origin of man, physical, psychological, and spiritual. And in his spiritual, he is from above. He is the gift of the gods. Manas is the gift of the Manasaputras, which are supposed to be the fifth divine hierarchies of beings. They gave us the light of Manas, great beings, sacrificed themselves. As in the Greek mythology, the heavenly fire brought to earth. When man was given that thinking principle, self-conscious choosing intellectual principle, which makes him more than an animal. The one fundamental difference between the animals have a generic consciousness. Man has an individual consciousness. He can say, I am I. That self-reflective consciousness is a special prerogative and right of a human being, not of an animal. And this is a mystery. This manas and buddhi, manas and this karmic nature, kama, the child of Kamadeva, that feeling of devotion that arose in the infant mind when he was endowed with this consciousness. And that feeling of devotion to the great beings, to these fathers of the human race. that devotion still exists in the infant babe, that devotion still exists in the heart of an untutored, ordinary, average human being in a village. It is lost in the academies and universities, where human beings are there, where they are being bombarded with all modern scientific jargon. That infinite, tender, mercy and compassionate feeling, that yearning of the human soul towards the divine, is lost by modern university men. That is an unfortunate thing, that science stifles that innate longing of the human heart towards Godhead. And all religions have become dogmatic, that we have to resurrect ourselves, not that the theosophist and the occultist respects science and the scientific discoveries. The analysis of man at the lower levels can be left to science, says Madame Blavatsky. But when it comes to the analysis of the inner man, manasik and the buddhic, it cannot be left to the tender mercies of the scientists, says Madame Blavatsky, because they will make a hash of it. To probe into the inner essence of things, tattva-gnan, requires an altogether different faculties and not the human reason. It requires an intuitive perception, spiritual perceptions from buddhi-manas, that one can probe the kernel of matter and record the soul of things. And this is a matter of discipline within ourselves, where we take into consideration into our control all the laboratory of our own being. The crucible, the burette, the pipette in the laboratory is there. The telescope, the microscope is there. The electron microscope is also there. But says the light on the path, within the microscope lies a mystery that no machinery can probe. You know, bacteria, viruses and fungi, they are there, but they are made of elemental nucleoles. Only the penetrating eye of a seer, that spiritual perceptions are altogether different from rational perception, from sensory perception, or from mental cognition. Intuition is not an extension of logic. No. It is a leap in consciousness, says Albert Einstein. A leap in consciousness that says it is this and nothing else, which does not require reasoning faculty, does not require cerebration of the human brain, doesn't require the ratiocinative processes of thought. It's an instantaneous recognition of a reality beyond the reach and range of human thought, conception and similitude. It's an union, yoga, of the man's spirit with the divine spirit, of manas with buddhi. Recognition of the one source of life from which we have come, to which we attend to. From the known to the unknown, from the unknown to the known, are two bilateral processes. That is why man is endowed with triple evolutionary principles. The monadic, the spiritual, the manasic, the intellectual, and the material, the physical. In the secret doctrine, Madame Blavatsky quotes Shakespeare, different natures marvelously mixed. That's the mystery of life. Different natures marvelously mixed. Why? Because those different natures of human beings, septenary, are divided from seven dhyanic intelligences. Different classes, both in Hindu philosophies come the Pitris, in the Greeks come the Logoic, rays of the Logos, and man is a rays or this complete composite entity of the seven rays of the Logos synthesized by Devi Prakriti. So these divine beings and intelligences operate in man including within the biological processes in the human physiology. There's something which is unknown to modern science. There was a great theosophist in Europe, Rudolf Steiner, who also says that there is more physiology in theosophy than in physiology itself. And there is also called anatomy and the various human brain. Nowadays, there was a book written by one Eskel. That book, the Sir John Eccles, who has done a wonderful work on the human brain, a supercomputer it is, so wonderful that he dissected the various brain cells, the right hemisphere, the left hemisphere, the small brain at the back, cerebellum, and he has come to an astounding conclusion, almost spiritual, akin to theosophy, by only physical physicist. So, a physicist and a mathematician is nearer to the theosophical viewpoint than a materialist and a religious fanatic. Do you get the point? So a scientific mind, detached from its this thing, has greater potentiality of coming nearer to the truth than otherwise. But a religious fanatic and a downright materialistic philosopher is far away from the truth. These are some of the ideas, and we can now just end our talk, then we shall have some questions and answers. As was said in the earlier preliminary remarks, our subject is not complete, it is fragmentary as usual, but we can only point out, see now, he says, during the earliest beginnings of psychic and physical intellect being dormant and consciousness still undeveloped, the spiritual conceptions of that race were quite unconnected with its physical surroundings. Our ancestors had more spiritual, natural flow towards the spiritual understanding of nature. Divine man dwelt in his animal, the externally human form. And if there was instinct in him, no self-consciousness came to enlighten the darkness of the latent fifth principle. This was man before he developed the fifth principle, manas, a manasic man. When moved by the law of evolution, the laws of wisdom, the manasaputras, infused into him the spark of consciousness. The first feeling it awoke to life and activity was a sense of solidarity of oneness with his spiritual creators. Man is a compound of spiritual creators. As a child's first feeling for his mother and nurse, so the first aspirations of the awakening consciousness in primitive man were for those whose element he felt within himself, who yet were outside and independent of him. Devotion arose out of that feeling and became the first and foremost motor in his nature. It is the only one which is natural in our heart, which is innate in us, and which we find alike in human babe and the young of the animal. This feeling of irrepressible, instinctive aspiration in primitive man is beautifully and intuitionally described by Carlyle. And then she gives you the great antique heart, which we shall read out at the close of our talk, today's talk. Now some questions. Thank you. Now, can we say that the mystery of human being is a mystery of the manas, the dual manas? That was said in the talk. And when, in terms of psychology of Jung and others, can we say it comes nearer to the theosophical viewpoint? There are many mysteries in human nature. Madame Blavatsky, at one point in the Secret Doctrine, also speaks of the dark mystery of embryology and of heredity. The formation of the fetus in the maternal womb, in the womb, is a mystery in itself. It's a marvelous mystery. The physiologists and the biologists wonder at it, but does not know how the child grows. Ordinary life, we see how the child is growing. From within, without. Not from without, within. The seed, how it sprouts. The bud, how it blooms into a flower. It's a mystery. You can feel it, the divine breath. Don't try to understand life with the intellect. It is a futile. It is an exercise in futility. Feel that awakening, it is that yearning of the human soul. That is life. And Freud has spoken about the id, the ego and the superego. Perhaps, the superego may be approximating the fringes of the higher manas. Not even that, perhaps. I don't know. Perhaps. Because the mind is a heaven gift. The body is from the lower nature, of processes, of formative forces of nature. But the mind is something which is potential. Atma is a ray of Paramatma, inseparable. Buddhi, a ray of the universal over soul, alaya. A vehicle of Atma. Mind, Mahat, is the gift of the gods. Manas is synonymous with Mahat, secret doctrine, the glossary. Into all those things, the psychologists, the psychiatrists have not gone into. And unfortunately, even today they say, the neuroanatomists and the neurophysiologists are still not convinced that the brain is an instrument of the mind. They say the mind is an instrument of the brain. That is a block. The convolutions and the sulci and the gyri of the human brain and the complexity of human brain is a complexity of manas. The more developed the manasic faculty, the more smaller the brain, but the complexity and the functioning is something different. Animals have a big brain, but there are very few sulci and gyri. And that we have developed from savagery or that we have developed from the ape is a distortion of truth. We have not developed from the ape, although we have an ape-like structure at once upon a time. The secret doctrine has a lot to say about it. We are born divine and we go back to the divine through all these complicated, intricate pathways of evolution, till we re-become the divine plus the experience gained as a conscious manasic being. We have lost our intuitive faculty with the development of reason. There is a beautiful chapter in Isis Unveiled. Instinct, reason, intuition. Study it. Instinct, reason, intuition. Then you will see, as reason develops, intuition atrophies. We have now to develop rational reasoning from the right premises to arrive at the right conclusion. And who is to judge which is the right premise and which is the wrong premise? For that, you are given the various references in the literature. This man speaks, this man speaks. And Patanjali in his Yoga Sutra speaks of cognition results from perception, inference, testimony. Book the first. Perception, inference, testimony. Perception is sensory. Inference is dialectical, intellectual. And the third is intuitional. Testimony. Theosophy lays great stress on the universal testimony of endless series of sages and seers, with corroborative evidences from the contemporary histories ever since historical ages and even in the prehistoric periods of humanity, and gives you a collective testimony which forms a solid rock of probability that this is the truth. Still, ultimately, who will say this is the truth? Your own intuitions and faculties, when once developed. And we say, my intuition tells me this is this. That is not intuition. A gut sense is not intuition. A hunch is not intuition. My name Lagej. That is not intuition. Udaruj. This is not intuition. That certainty, which light on the past speaks of, knowledge with certainty, that comes only through conscious union or yoga, merger of manas with buddhi. Then the divine influx from Atma comes and percolates every fiber of our being to the very marrow of our bones. This is the possibility of human evolution. So modern psychologists, sorry to say, are nowhere nearer even the higher manas. I think our time is up and we shall end with this. See now what Carlyle says. The great antique heart, how like a child's in his simplicity, like a man's in his earnest solemnity and depth. Heaven lies over him wheresoever he goes or stands on the earth, making all the earth a mystic temple to him, the earth's business all a kind of worship, worthy of relationship with. Glimpses of bright creatures flash in the common sunlight, angels yet hover doing God's messages among men. Wonder, miracle, encompasses the man. He lives in an element of miracle. A great law of duty, high as this to infinitudes, heaven and hell, dwarfing all, annihilating all else. It was a reality, and it is one. The garment only of it is dead. The essence of it lives through all times and through all eternity. How comes our physical body to the state of perfection it is found now? Through millions of years of evolution, yet never through or from animals, as taught by materialism, Carlyle says, the essence of our being, the mystery in us that calls itself I, what worth have we for such things? It is a breath of heaven. The highest being reveals himself in man. This body, these faculties, this life of ours, is it not all as a vesture for the unnamed? The breath of heaven, or rather the breath of life, called in the Bible nephesh, is in every animal, in every animate speck, as in every mineral atom. But not of these has, like man, the consciousness of the nature of that highest being, as none has that divine harmony in its form which man possesses. There is but one temple in the universe, and that is the body of man. Nothing is holier than that high form. We touch heaven when we lay our hand on a human body. This sounds like a mere flourish of rhetoric at Carlyle, but it is not so. If well meditated, it will turn out to be a scientific fact, the expression of the actual truth of the thing. We are the miracle of miracles, the great inscrutable mystery.